Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Money Control Intelligence. Today we have with us Rajni Thakur, who is the Chief Economist of RBL Bank. Rajni has had a long experience working with various investment banks and corporate sector. She was with Everstone Group, and before RBL Bank, she was with Deutsche Bank as a strategist. Rajni, welcome to Money Control Intelligence.
Thank you very much, Aru. Pleasure as always.
We are meeting at a time, we are talking at a time when the caseload across the country is rising again. It is almost like deja vu. What we saw in April 2020, we are seeing similar things in April 2020. So Rajni, to start off with, I would just like to ask you your expectations and your forecasts from the economy for 2021-22. What's your forecast and where do you see the economy headed in the current financial year, which is just been?
Thank you very much, Arup. Again, yes, it's kind of a deja vu. We are health-wise, at least, we are back to where we were a year back, and probably, you know, with much more intense caseload than before. At the same time, I think we are materially different from where we were a year back in terms of our preparedness to handle both health outcome, but more importantly, from my perspective, an economic and growth outcome as well. Mm-hmm. So while we've been watching over each of these news flow and data flow coming on, we've constantly been updating our sheets. We don't see a major difference for now in terms of our growth expectation, despite some of the local lockdowns in all the three major metros, Delhi, Mumbai, and Bangalore. So for us, Q4 GDP just went by, but that still remains intact at the 1%. Q1, April to June, yet to play out, but that's where we could see maximum impact going by the current medical opinion on the second wave. We've marginally reduced it to 30% YOY from our 32% earlier forecast for the quarterly growth. And for the other three quarters, we still remain on track. In fact, I see an upside now in Q3 for the pent-up services demand that we were factoring in a lot in Q1, which should now show up in Q3. So we could actually have an upside as well to the 12% growth forecast for the next fiscal year.
So you expect tough services like hospitality, tourism and others to really rebound from the October-December quarter of the current financial year?
If the current wave kind of takes away the services normalization from Q1, my sense is that, you know, it will be a more reluctant path to recovery, and Q2 could not have as big a recovery that we earlier expected. But Q3 should definitely go, also because it kind of overlaps with the festive period, should see a material jump on the service sector normalization too. So that's one thing on the growth side that's still pending and we're waiting for it.
So the assumption is that the second wave would mirror the first wave in terms of cases arising now, just like they did last year. But just like last year when they started coming down October, November, December onwards, so we can expect the same. The presumption is that the second wave would follow the pattern.
So for us on the economic outcome, the assumption is that Q1 could suffer, but the back to normalcy we saw in manufacturing, which was rather quick, is not the same pace we would see in services. It will probably be a more reluctant back to normalization.
So what is your GDP forecast for the full GDP
forecast? We are at 12%. Which we were before the second wave as well. So hasn't really changed that.
All right. So essentially, there was an expectation, everyone has expectations of when the economy would go back to pre-pandemic levels. So that for you also hasn't changed, that timeline also hasn't changed.
For now, no. Of course, all of this is based on a big assumption that the second wave will kind of pass through without material impact on economic outcome. So that's one thing that remains to be seen. That risk is there on the horizon. But at the same time, for now, no.
And you'll probably take a relook at your estimates after the April-June GDP data comes out. Like that would be, I think, a better time to take a look at the GDP estimates.
I think we would start relooking if the second wave starts impacting services and otherwise broader economic activities also beyond mid-May. So for now, April and May is what the medical community is kind of giving as an peak for second wave and subside further. And that's something we've factored in. But if it extends beyond May is when we'll start relooking at these numbers.
Now, Rajni, just like your and many other agencies and banks, GDP estimates, which came before the second wave really hit, same with the government's budget, same with the finance minister, Nirmala Sitharaman's budget. It was obviously drafted much before the second wave hit, and there were a lot of assumptions. So the basic themes we all know, increased focus on public investment in infrastructure and a focus on privatization. So do you still see these two things, these two initiatives panning out the way government intended to, given that we are having, you know, a second wave? And yes, the economy is in a better place than what it was at the same period last year. But do you see the budget forecasts of 10.5% GDP growth, of an infra push, of, you know, a privatization plan be pulled off successfully, including that of banks? Do you see that the budget initiatives panning out smoothly for the in the year? Or do you think the government will have to relook at some of those plans in light of increasing caseload and what it and how it could impact it?
So Arup, let's look at this item-wise. First off, if the pandemic second wave has a limited expanse in terms of time and impact, then everything stays on track. So of course, we are assuming, or the base case is, that this doesn't go out of control, which it would likely not, given all the signs. A big part was infrastructure push. Now, infrastructure push, or I would actually tend to describe it as government expenditure push more than infrastructure push, was something that was the need of the hour for the economy for, I think, good 3 years. Ever since your private consumption numbers had started coming down and your investment numbers were not picking up. And a major risk aversion was building up in the system. We'd had some liquidity episodes as well. We had had the like of IIFL episodes in the financial markets. So, you know, there were multiple reasons together that took the risk appetite away. So already we were at a phase where investment cycle wasn't picking up and we were waiting. When things started getting on the right, conditions started putting up together, the risk aversion seeped in and, you know, everybody was more on a withdrawal mode. Now, at a time like this, the only economic agent that can front load either consumption or investment is government. So in certain ways, pandemic, yes, pushed the urgency of the matter of government front-loading this, but that's something that was building up. And I see that kind of continuing. Because if you notice our capacity utilization numbers, they haven't hit 80% since March 2011. So it's a long time, you know. So, and a rule of thumb is you have to cross 78-80% for new investments to come in. And at certain point, one needs to sit back and look at the bigger picture and understand we are giving all the right policies and nudges for the private investment to pick up. Why is it not happening? And a large part of it has to do with demand conditions. You know, that uncertainty is not something that's conducive to new and fresh investment coming in. And that needs to be addressed. And the most effective way of doing that is government expenditure.
All right,
so yes, COVID has pushed the urgency, but that's something that was building up before COVID pandemic as well. And that's something that is likely to stay till the private sector impetus has picked up and government can comfortably withdraw from the economic front loading.
What about privatization? Where you think that if the second wave continues, that will also, you know, those who hold the capital, they will also probably take a look at their investments and all that, or planned investments. So you think the very ambitious privatization program that the government has embarked on, do you think that can be?
So my sense in this matter is that when we are looking at pushing output, there are few basic factors of production, you know, what the textbook tells you, land, labor, capital, productivity. And for us in India, each of these factors are constrained by one or the other reason why it cannot be unlocked in its value and hence play out in the economy. Government has taken big step in terms of, you know, kind of starting to unlock some of these, and privatization is a big step towards that. But at least it starts building up on the capital or firepower to be able to intervene in economic impetus. Now, for that to happen, despite second wave in India currently happening, my sense would be that it would continue, because a lot of it has to do with financial sector and the sentiments thereof. And globally, we are still looking at a year where we are moving towards normalization. It's much better than what 2020 was in terms of actual activities on ground. At the same time, all stimulus that we saw coming in last year still supports the financial market prices and the asset valuation. So overall, you still are looking at a year where your financial market or the asset values that a government would potentially look at is something that could materialize. And if that's happening all over the world, but for bouts of negativity in Indian market, I really don't see that hampering Indian market sentiments as well. It will most likely percolate. And that should give government a good backdrop to start working on some of these privatization plans.
Also, I guess what all of this implies is that when it comes to the government's own budgetary targets, whether it's GDP or whether it's a fiscal deficit target of 6.8 or a borrowing target of 12 lakh crore, I think from what we are speaking about, that we need to wait and watch. It's too early to say whether those targets will be met or not, whether the government can stick to its fiscal roadmap. I guess probably we need to wait another quarter or so before we can start looking at that.
So my sense is, again, this kind of uncertainty doesn't go away till the healthy scare goes away, what if there is a vaccination issue? There could be multiple scenarios that could play out and then take away all your basic assumptions. But assuming your health issue is taken care of and your health outcome is as expected, I think then, and on the economic side, you should most likely have the base case that all most of these agencies have. Because it's already stimulated, it's already powered by support from the policymakers. And that's one where both intentions are clear. Yesterday, RBI has made clear in terms of willingness of coming up with new app. So you have all these policymakers supporting it, their intention to work through it, and now the map is laid out as well. So we are not in the sudden surprise mode that we were caught last year.
All right. So speaking of the RBI. So yesterday, RBI again kept rates unchanged and also gave much more clarity on its own bond purchasing program in the secondary markets. Sure. So clearly, so far what we have seen is sort of a cohesion between the fiscal policy and the monetary policy side of things. Going ahead, what are the things that the RBI really needs to be careful about? What are the things or issues that the RBI really needs to look at, like in the coming few months?
Yeah. So for RBI, I think a bigger job was making market comfortable with its preferred range of yields despite the huge government borrowing program. And on various forums, they've been communicating that we intend to back it up, we will back it up, we'll figure out new instruments and tools and make sure that you have it. So of course, then the market would want, give me a calendar, or somebody else would have different hours. But then RBI has figured out the right way to balance it out. And I am one of those who strongly believes in the power of policymakers. If the need be and if the intention is to support this, they will be able to pull out. We've never had to go for a yield curve or a control or a QE kind of situation. We've managed it pretty much well without that. And that's what the governor was emphasizing yesterday as well, that they managed a smooth borrowing, government borrowing program last year too, at the peak of pandemic. So there's no reason they would not. The only risk that they have and comes from the fact that while on the face of it, your fiscal and monetary policy pillars are working in coordination, if you notice the statement, they still urge the government to work on the inflationary pressures coming from the oil prices, for example. And that's been constant for last two statements where they know that inflation is, it's getting broadly entrenched and it needs to be addressed. And global prices are a trend that you cannot control. You can change your suppliers. That's not something that works on a quick note. But inflation expectations gets entrenched very, very quickly on both the production and consumption side and starts hitting down. So that's one. And of course, the global spillover, because how US does, the fact that the biggest global economy is being pumped up at a time when it's already doing very well. It's an unusual, one of its kind peacetime stimulus that we have seen ever in history.
And it could work. The differences between the way US has gone about its stimulus huge amounts, probably a one-shot stimulus compared to India, which has gone it in phases. Like the way Indian policy makers defended that, first we looked at the supply side for Atmanirbhar Bharat program, and then it was in the budget where we looked at the demand side with our fiscal push. And you know, that's, there's an interesting difference, and that I think that difference will also stay in what the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen suggested a few days ago. Yeah. That you know, they need, that the G20 countries need to sit together and work on a global minimum corporate tax rate. And what is your view on it? Because the sense is that the Indian government may not be in its favor, because here, just in 2019, the finance minister cut corporate taxes, and now just going for an increase because of a sort of a global minimum corporate tax framework. Maybe that would not. But what is your view on, you know, because we know why it has happened, why US wants to fund its own stimulus through an increase in taxes. And that would make it uncompetitive. That's why it wants the other countries to, you know, work with it. But what is your view generally on this global minimum corporate tax?
I will take a little longer to answer this. Now, this is a quintessential market structure issues. When things go tight, every supplier in the market, and in this case, they are different countries, would want to start undercutting, which in this case was taxes, to make sure that you know they attract more investments onto manufacturing. Add to it the general wave against globalization, and everybody wants to move manufacturing to their local site and all. Somewhere with the change in scene in political and in economic thought process, that realization or the textbook realization is coming back again, that you know, you cannot start undercutting, we have to work together for the overall good to expand. Otherwise, you know, you are in a lose-lose situation instead of a win-win situation. Yes. And technocrats would always be the first to kind of point it out that this is not working. Though we had a whole phase of trade war and tariff increase and tax increase and profits not being repatriated. And we are a small, actually small supplier in the overall global market if you look at it. But some of the biggest markets have kind of been working on that kind of a structure. So immediately, I don't see that panning out. It's a big geopolitical economic issue.
Yes.
And it has some short-term pains for the global gains to come through. Mm-hmm. And at a time of pandemic or where everybody is already on a negative output side, it's not likely to pick up very, very quickly. But this was a thought process that had built up ever since 1960s, when the whole capitalism and broader open economy, more trade, taxes for the government to be able to give industrial infrastructure seed in. And then we went through a wave where the thought process was against it. We see a reversal. That's very heartening. To what is theoretically a more win-win situation. But at the same time, yes, in Indian case, we've just looked at corporate tax reduction as a major step to push manufacturing locally. Yes. For various other reasons, as it is, our manufacturing hasn't been doing well, and we are trying to figure out more steps, more support to make sure that, you know, this kind of picks up. So at such a time, I really don't see that working out in Indian context, at least.
Rajni, thank you so much for your insights regarding the Indian and the global context. And thank you for speaking with us on the
Pleasure talking to you, Arup. Thank you very much.